interview with Leslie James at his home, 2602 Carrollton, Champaign. The date is Monday, April 19th, 1982. Okay, Mr. Jameson, in this interview, we're concerned with primarily two aspects. One is the fact that your sister and her husband had a local newspaper, the Illinois Times, and the other is that your family is one of the early black families that settled in Champaign, Urbana. So I guess we'll start with your family and living here. If you can, if you will tell us something about your parents and when they first came here and how they came to Champaign, Urbana.
Well, my parents came from Huntington, Tennessee. They came there for work because the Illinois Central Railroad was there, and that was the job program at that time that people were coming to Champaign. Most of the people were. They lived on White Street, right back to the Marquette School, around the 400 block on East White. And they stayed there until 1908. And they moved out on Els Avenue, 204 Els Avenue, Champaign, Illinois.
Okay,
you
said lived on Els. Were there a lot of black families, or should I say, were most of the black families who lived in Champaign-Urbana about that time living in that neighborhood? Because I know with other interviews, we've had Dale and Stanage streets and over that neighborhood mentioned.
There were no black families out there at that time. The only black family lived on Williams Street, on West Williams, at around the 400 block West Williams. That was named Roy's. They were the only two, their family and my family were the only two black families out there. After a few years later, my mother got Mr. and Ms. R.M. Scott out there, and Mr. and, Dr. and Ms. DeFay.
And what were your parents' names, and did you have any brothers or sisters?
My parents' names was Mr. and Ms. Andrew Jameson. I had two sisters, one Blanche Jameson, and Cute Ellis, who is deceased. Cute Ellis, C-U-D-E-L-L.
Okay, Mr. Jameson, having lived in Champaign so long, since 1908. I'm sure you're full of information about life here, situations here, lifestyle, for black people especially. How was your education in the Champaign schools?
The education was very good. I went to Lincoln School on the corner of Healy and Randall, and from Lincoln School, I went to Central School, where the next to the old post office uptown, and that was the eighth grade. And when I finished eighth grade, I went to Champaign High School on the corner of State and Green, which now they call Central, up on Euless County.
Were the schools very integrated at that time, or segregated or what?
No, the schools were integrated. We did not have no trouble on the sort of integration.
Were a lot of black students compared to white students in the schools? Because I know at one time the black population in Champaign was estimated about 2%. I think it's about 10% now. So in terms of how many students were in the schools, approximately how many blacks were there in comparison to whites?
The comparison was very low among the blacks. I cannot name the percentage, really. I really don't, but it was very low. I had a class of graduation in my senior year at Champaign High School, and there was only six of us graduated.
Six blacks or six people?
Six blacks.
Oh, okay. Now, what about housing? You mentioned that your family was the only one who was the only black family for a while who lived out on L. So that was not a neighborhood that was highly settled by blacks.
No, because at that time most of the blacks lived up in one section of the town that they called the North End. It's just like it is today. Everybody lives in one place. Out on Ells Avenue, we were the first black family for a number of years out there. Only, as I mentioned before, that the Roys lived on West William. And then later there was about five families moved out there. The Hineses, the Everhards, the Scotts, and the Wilsons.
Now the Everhards and the Wilsons, who are they? What are the first names of?
The Wilson was Dr. DeBay's mother, and he lived in the house. The Raymond Scotts lived next door, and the Everhards lived down there. It was three families lived right next to them.
And the Hines, was it Ruth Hines?
No, the Hines was Mr. and Mrs. Bay Hines was Mrs. Ruth Hines' husband's parents.
Oh, okay. So that the North End is, as it's called today, was the same North End then in which most of the black people settled.
Settled in the same location.
What about, well, I know there, you mentioned before that in terms of eating or going, that black people pretty much did what they wanted here.
In the early stages of Champaign, they did. But later on in years, as I said, that they kind of brought on themselves, and I think I should have said it, but they did by the way they went into places, dressed and everything. Then they segregated, and there was some restaurants that they couldn't go in. The majority of the restaurants, all the restaurants, there was no restaurant in Champaign or Urbana that they could go in even if they could get around 19. Well, I don't know about 1914, but my mother told me 1913-14, clear up to when I was in university in 27, that I know that they couldn't eat any place. Even the people over on the campus, they couldn't eat any place.
So that was more so due to the conduct and appearance of the blacks who went to these places?
Well, maybe they made that excuse at first, but it wasn't any, it was supposed to be an excuse in later years because the same people were there then. But over on the campus, they couldn't, so you know it had to be some difference.
How do you feel that with the greater number of blacks who came into Champaign-Urbana, I think it was in the 40s, how do you feel that contributed to the continuance of the segregation?
Well, that was about the time of World War II that segregation wasn't no better because you still had segregation in the armed forces and everything. And the segregation didn't change a little bit until after the later years when the civil rights movement came in. Then it changed every place nationally.
I know in interviewing some other person, we've heard the word influx used in reference to all the blacks who came up from the South. And some black people here hold the opinion that conditions changed when so many blacks started coming in.
It might have changed for them, but I didn't see any proof of that. Really, the only chance that, well, wasn't any proof, the only chance that a black had here was day work, our construction work, or that roundhouse, which they had a roundhouse there. that was the only jobs that was here in the university of cooking on the campus. It wasn't the buildings. There was no jobs in the building. If you worked for people, you servants, or if you, there was just about three or four chauffeurs here in the town at that time. Why, that was the only occupation. The influx, they did come north. And well, only north couldn't find anything to go on to college. But there wasn't any more work then. Well, I should say that there wasn't any more work to do then than usual. Because it wasn't no different.
So there weren't many professional jobs or teaching jobs, that sort of thing?
There was no teaching jobs at that time. We had one doctor here. The first doctor here was Dr. Rowan. The next doctor here was Dr. Ellis. Dr. Rowan was a very good doctor, and Dr. Ellis, but the thing about it, their fall was that they could not collect from the people to survive in the money part. Dr. Ellis was a university man. He was a Kappa brother. He did various things for the students over on the campus and the people, and he did everything he could, but later on in year, he transferred from black to white papers because he could get his money.
You mentioned that he's a Kappa brother, so you're a Kappa?
Right.
How big were the fraternities and sororities? How much importance was attached to them when you were at the university?
The fraternities and sororities played a prominent part among the black students over the University of Illinois. The reason I say that was a way of communication of them getting together. There was no place for them to go only unless they go to people's houses in a town in which they did, and there's people on Sundays having for dinner and everything. On a Friday night, they would have Lyceum at Bethel AME Church, where all the students went to get together, and they would have a lot of fun there writing papers and jokes on students. The boys and girls on the campus, the Kappa House was there at that time, and Alpha Phi Alpha, the Kappa Outside, and the Kappa Alpha Phi Alpha, the Kappa Outside, and the sorority house, the Alpha sorority. I mean, what is it?
Sorority?
AKA. Alpha Kappa Alpha. And the Omegas didn't come in until later years. The Omega fraternity, it was down on, you see, the Kappa house was on in Urbana on Clark Street. The sorority house was on Stoughton Street. The Alpha House fraternity was on the corner of Clark and 6th. The Omegas, they didn't have a house, but they stayed with a family named Williams, and they kept the boys there because there was only 6 boys in the house at that time. But it was a very good relation among the town people and the students, which some of us should rub off on some of these students of the day.
So the fraternities and sororities, in addition to Bethel's, the Lyceum in Bethel, provided a kind of social outlet for the black students.
That's right.
Now, my understanding is there weren't many black students at the University of Illinois during the time you were there. What was it, about 28?
Oh, there were more students there.
I think that you said it was 1928.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there was about 100 people.
About 150 black students.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it might be about the same ratio as there is now, because there are about 35,000 students at the university.
Yeah, well, the ratio is very low here now.
Yeah, and the last count that I had from the Minority Affairs Director, there were about 1,500 black students.
So compared to speaking,
and you mentioned that the camaraderie between the university students and the people in the community. So the division, as we hear about it now, between town and gown, students don't really go into, which would basically be the North End community, didn't always exist.
Well, you take today, these students, they do not have fraternity and sorority houses. They have dormitories, residence halls, right? And the students do not go out and meet the town people, which it would be better for them, more experience for them, and to let the town people know what their needs in the community would be, and it would help them.
Now you mentioned a Williams family that took in Omega. Several families either took in students or fed students, but at that time, students couldn't live in the dorms, you know, is that right, or they had no place for them?
Yeah, they didn't have dorms. Mostly they had was a church and sorority house on the campus. There were people that rented rooms to students, which as students stay now. If the students didn't want to stay at a fraternity or sorority, they stayed in town with the town people.
I know there's Mrs. Pope, Mrs. Carrie Alice Pope. I mean,
she was a AKA.
Right, and they used to take in students and Mother Jones and several
other
people.
Yeah. Well, is that on?
Jones.
Yeah, she was entertained. All the students in town could come out there and party and enjoy themselves in the weekends.
And I've heard that at various times that people in the community and the students used to really have a very good, warm relationship. And once they started building the dorms and what have you, and so many apartments, that the students, the black students, quit socializing so much with community people, and they really don't go among where, and when I think of community in the North End, they really don't visit the North End that much. It's almost like it's taboo, it's a taboo area.
Well, your community people, I wouldn't all say it was just the North End, but they could go any place if they make themselves available. But the thing about the students of today do not realize what their parents had went through when they was in school here. The parents had a hard time. They didn't have the money and things like that, that they had to, in other words, if some of the town people hadn't fed them, they'd have starved. I had many a person, right now, good friends of mine in Chicago, New York, I think, that have thanked me all the time, because on Sunday I would bring some of the guys or some of the girls out to the house for Sunday dinner. And they would associate and believe it. The students of today have got a feeling of they are too much above the people in the community, or the people in the community are too dumb, that they don't want to associate with them, and they will not speak to them on the campus even. And so the people in the community do not feel like that they want to be bothered either. There are times over there, like they have breakfasts for each year for the football team, and they ask the men in the community to come up to breakfast. Bruce Nesbitt does, and have Mike White now, and they tell the conditions they want the people in the community to take an interest in the students. But the students don't give themselves any way that the community can take interest in. They do not communicate, do not call the men, give them cars, anything they want to help. And a lot of times they can help.
Yes, I know that you've seen changes between the university and the community over the years in education, going from schools that were fully integrated to segregated schools and then back to integrated schools. Like you mentioned, restaurants and jobs. What about other places like the theaters? You mentioned once the Buzzard Roost.
Buzzard Roost, where people started, the reason I called it the Buzzard Roost, where they set up in the balcony, way back up in the balcony.
This is at the movies?
This is at the movie theaters. Any movie theater, the Orpheum, the Rialto, the Virginia, all of them were like that. And until recent years, and They used to have good acts here where people wanted to see them but couldn't bop open all of them. Used to come here years ago and everything. But yet they had set up there until the conditions changed in the later years, as I said, that they stopped that. And the civil rights was the cause of this stuff.
By civil rights, you mean like the civil rights movement around the late 60s?
That's right.
And early
70s. I mean, you didn't have, I shouldn't say it, but you didn't have the freedom to go until.
Mm-hmm. So now, since you mentioned the civil rights movement, how did you see it as affecting Champaign, Urbana, in terms of jobs, housing, employment, education? You see many gains made after, say, 1968.
I personally myself, I did see a lot of gains. It looked first, I would say that Champaign and Urbana are very prejudiced. It is, they are very prejudiced. It opened up a lot of jobs. A lot of people really hadn't come in contact with as many blacks as they did during the civil rights when as much pain raised about the privileges that a black person wanted and should have had, and which they were so far behind in of having these privileges up to the time 60 when they were in effect. But also that the people didn't take advantage, which it is now just as bad as it was before 60. In other words, we haven't gained anything.
Well,
in a way, the jobs are going in place wanted, but your privilege for jobs for the blacks, unemployment and everything, we haven't gained a thing.
One of the things, observations I've made in talking with various people is, depending on the person with whom you talk, their age, or where they live in Champaign, Urbana, their perception of racism and segregation is so different. This is, I talked with one lady who's about 87, 88 years old, maybe around 90, who led a very, rather sheltered life. So she didn't feel that there was that much segregation and racism in Champaign, Urbana. Talking with somebody else who got out in the streets a lot, was, you know, around in different places, that person could see it much differently. This one person mentioned that her children played with whites. The kids thought they were white. There was an incident where some white kids mentioned to her kids that there were some colored people in the neighborhood. They didn't realize they were the colored people because it was her children were fairly integrated. So how, you know, in terms of just an overall picture of, I'll say, racial relations in Champaign, Urbana, did you see it on the side that there was really no racism and segregation, or were you much more exposed to it?
I was exposed to both parts because I got around. When I was a child, I mean, youngest, around 10, 11, 12 on up through high school, I didn't play nothing with nothing but the wealthiest kids in town. I still knew that I was black. When you really realize that you're black is when you get in high school. The kids play together until they get in high school. Then you notice the change where they think that they are better than you. And you notice the difference of the people in this town that says that they didn't know the difference. They hadn't been in place, or they were satisfied whatever they had had. And we have people in the town today that whatever they get, they're satisfied with it, and they do not speak out about it. But I really know, I have had some awful times in this town on the different athletic teams that I played on. And I was the only black that played on the teams in the year when I graduated. I was spit on. I was had a curtain pulled around me to eat in the restaurant. I was said that in Chicago that I couldn't sleep at the YMCA down the loop. I had to go on South Side.
In athletics, This is at the university?
No, this is at Champaign.
Champaign High School. And what sports were you involved in?
Baseball, basketball, track, and football.
So were you generally the only black on?
I was only black
on
at
the
that
team.
Time. 4 years I was there. And my 4 years, I just went right on through the 4 years.
So now how was that handled by the coaches and the teachers and all when these camps?
Well, I could say one thing about my dear mother. I was in the first time I went to Chicago to play Harrison Tech in basketball in one time. I was up at the YMCA. The coach come up and told me that if I wanted to stay there, I had to go on the south side. Now that was at 12 o'clock at night, and that was the first time that I ever was in Chicago.
This is the coach of your Champaign.
Les Moyer, I'm gonna name your name.
Les Moyer.
Well, yeah.
And you was the coach of the Champaign team.
Yeah.
So he didn't look out for you.
No, but the boys on the team said no, that I could sleep with them. And that's where it stayed. I told them to send me back. When I got back to Champaign, I told my mother. She went up there and jacked the principal up, and he gave the coach hey. But to me, he was a segregation anyhow. Because I went over to Wilson's Cafeteria in Decatur, played baseball. And after the game, they came us to the Wilson Cafeteria to eat. And they wanted to put a curtain around me in the dining room.
And who is they? The people at Wilson's?
The Wilson Cafeteria.
To put a curtain so nobody white would see this black boy sitting
there. And the coach didn't say nothing about it. Didn't do nothing about it. And so I didn't eat.
So what made you continue to play for Champaign and given all these things that were done to you?
I don't know if you would call me crazy, or I was crazy about athletics, or that somebody had to do this to let it be known what was happening. My mother used to, I wouldn't let her come to football games, but she went, her and Irma Bridgewater went to all the basketball games. Irma went to, always went to the basketball games now. But anything that happened, my mother would tell the principal, and the principal was very good, C.S. Dale, and he was very good, and he would jack this coach up about it. In later years, the coach got so weak, and he's about ready to die, and he asked me for a drink one time, and I threw it out.
You mentioned the name of Irma Bridgewater a couple of times. I know that's Irma Scott Bridgewater, and you mentioned the DeFays, the Hines. So along with the Jamersons, these were some of the early families, black families who lived in Champaign-Urbana area.
Yeah, in 1927, the Forreys moved out there.
Did you repeat that name?
Forre, F-O-R-E-E-S. The Forreys moved on Charles Street at the old Hines' home. And the white people didn't want them out there. The Ku Klux Klan's come out there and burn a cross. The blacks uptown in the North End, Walter Smith was one of the leaders. He got a gang to march down the railroad and to come out there on Charles Street and to drive them Klans away.
So was the Klan very active in Champaign-Urbana?
Yes.
And how active? Did you see them all the time?
No, you didn't see them all the time, but any time anything was going to happen, they'd put on their gown and parade around and burn a cross.
So they actually did that, paraded up and down the street?
Oh, yes.
When did that kind of thing stop?
Well, they stopped after they seen that the blacks wasn't going to take them one. All of them had guns.
Was this before, did they stop like before the big civil rights movement?
Oh, yes.
That's interesting because the Klan is generally associated with the South, but after having moved here to the Midwest, I find the Klan to be much more active around here.
The Klan are much more active in Illinois and Indiana.
So they burned, can you think of any other cross burning incidents? that involved Klans or anything?
Well, no, that's only one that I was, when I was associated with. I was sick in bed, and I was ready to graduate, and I couldn't get out of bed to go to. And I knew all that, and that was just only a block from D.C. where I lived.
So that was in, say, 27?
Yeah.
And the Foreys were a black family.
That's
and
they didn't want them on Charles Street, where the Hines' home city.
So the Scotts, the Hines, the Foreys, and the Fays, and Williams that lived in that area, Wilson. So these were some of the early families.
Yeah.
Along with the Popes and the Banks.
Well, the Popes and Banks lived on the other side. At what bank?
Dawson Banks, and his, I don't know if it might have been his parents.
Yeah, well, he was Dawson Banks' parents. The Jones was a Pope, Irvin Jones.
Irvin Jones.
Well, I guess there were some more older people that I just can't think of right now.
Well, these are, you know, some of these names keep coming up again and again about families who lived around here for quite some time. Have you, do you recall hearing your parents say anything, since they came here about 1880, that initially blacks weren't allowed to settle in Champaign or Banner, but lived in outlying areas and came in to work? Have you ever heard them?
I never did hear that. There were blacks living around the small, around the counties, like Mrs. Cecil Nelson. She lived in Sydney.
Now, Mrs. Cecil, is that Mrs. Carrie Nelson?
Carrie Nelson.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that the Nelson family, I mean, it was Carrie and them lived in Sydney.
I think it's
Sydney. They lived there because they wanted to live there. That's where they moved first, come up here. I don't know where they come from, but I didn't know. But they were good friends of my family. Mm-hmm. And there was different families lived around. Yeah, well, it was Carrie and Ernest, that's what
mm-hmm.
it was.
Mm-hmm. So, but there were blacks who settled, like in, say, Loda and...
Oh, yeah, there was one family in Loda, and Loda didn't have any black, but there was one black family in Loda. And out here in Broadland, the Smiths were very wealthy people. Down here in, Niels, and he was on, parents, he was on the board of trustees of University of Illinois. Now he is, yeah. He hasn't retired yet. He's going to retire.
This is a black man.
This is a black man, and the Neals were very wealthy farmers. They were black.
And remember where they lived?
The Neals lived in Broadland. The Smiths lived out here by Mansfield. That's where it was.
Okay. I'd like to ask you some questions about the Illinois Times, the paper that your sister and her husband had. When did the Times start? About what year?
I would say that the Times started around 1931, something like that.
So, what prompted them to start a newspaper?
Turn that off.
So, you said that Mr. Harris was just a newspaper man.
Yeah.
And you said it started maybe around 1931, or in the early. Mm-hmm. We can find out exactly when. So what was their audience? Did they, I mean, was it directed primarily at black people or at the community in general? Or?
Well, the paper was directed to the community in general. And they wrote a lot of civil rights news, too. They were for both the community
and the civil rights they stood for.
In looking at the Popular Times, I see that they have advertisements from some businesses in town, and it has all kinds of news. They even send advertisements for First National Bank. So it seemed to be pretty much established in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gazette and the, well, one was called the Gazette and the other was the News.
Courier.
The Courier, okay. They were both in existence at the same time.
Right.
Were there any other newspapers around about that time?
No, the Courier was in Atlanta and the News Gazette was in Champaign.
Now, how was the Times received? They had a pretty high circulation.
They had a good circulation.
It was a, what was it, a weekly or a daily or?
No, it was a weekly.
A weekly newspaper. Now, did anyone other than the Harrises work for the paper in the big
house?
So they did everything.
They did everything.
Reported the news, typed it, edited it, printed it.
True or false.
And then distributed to people,
right.
To people's houses. So what kind of things, other than civil rights, what kinds of things did they cover? I mean, many times a small weekly will cover the things that are, say, kind of social or an industry, of who was born, who died, who got married.
They covered who born, who got married, any dirt.
Dirt?
Society, all sorts of, there was no one thing. They just covered the news like it's supposed to be covered because you didn't have a black newspaper here. And the people showed interest in when they had such a good circulation. And a lot of it was out of town, they said.
Right. That happens, you know, a lot of times with minority papers that people who used to live in the community would still want to get it.
That's right.
To see what's going on.
And they got it. They sent it to them, too.
So do you think the larger papers, the Gazette and Courier, ever felt that there was any threat from the Times, or were they just neglecting black folks altogether?
I don't know if they thought it was any threat. I never did hear of it, and it never was shown.
The major papers, the dailies, didn't provide much coverage of black people and their activities unless you robbed the bank or something.
That's right. It doesn't to the day. It doesn't show anything unless you are. I mean, any of your marriages you notice in the paper or your society, or anything that you want to have that's decent here in town, the News Gazette doesn't put in there unless you beg them to come out there and send a reporter, and sometime he may not come.
So the Harris's paper gave it more the coverage that black people wanted to see. What was going on with black folks.
Right, right.
You reach others to find out what was going on with white folks.
Yeah.
So how long did the paper last? Now this one issue we have here is 1965.
I would just make a guess and say about 1970 or 71.
Now, I know that Mr. Harris is dead and
he's deceased.
It stopped when he died, or did you keep it going for a while?
No, it hadn't stopped.
So he did, you're saying he did most of the actual
the way it was, they would get the news. They would send it to another place to get it printed, see. Then it come back in, they would sit down. They had a printing company to do the printing.
So he did, it seems that he was more responsible as far as, you know, running it.
Circulation.
Yeah, and more involved with it than Mrs. Harris.
Well, I don't know if I put that in the finance thing. Well, I would say in terms of 50-50. In both of equal.
So down to the money on one side and getting in there and it seems like the Times was a rather political paper. It has the Illinois Times platform for Illinois, and among the things are sidewalks and pavements for all sections of our cities and better sanitation conditions in all our cities, end segregation and discrimination in public places, make Illinois the finest state in which to live. So it was more like a political arm.
Well, you take most papers on political.
Right.
Their platform is what should be in today, what we need. And you see, that was after the 60s that they still had their platform, what you need up there, particularly what they're talking about is the North End, same thing.
Right. Did they get much opposition to that?
No, because they was spreading the truth, and people were not with it. Harris was very smart, intelligent, and where he would put a question to a lot of these white people that they didn't want to answer.
I'm not.
No.
I don't do it.
No, I just